This episode is sponsored by Macmillan Audio. So many great books to read, so little time. One thing that helps is downloading audiobooks so you can squeeze in a chapter while you commute or cook dinner. Start listening to the audiobook named Best of 2022 by Audible, Apple, and more, Olga Dies Dreaming by Xochitl Gonzalez. It's the story of a status-driven wedding planner grappling with her absent mother, her glittering career amongst New York's elite, and her Puerto Rican roots in the wake of Hurricane Maria. The audiobook is read by three fantastic voices, Almarie Guerra, Inez del Castillo, Armando Riesco, each narrating a different perspective in standout performances. Start listening to Olga Dies Dreaming by Xochitl Gonzalez now, wherever audiobooks are sold.
Hello and welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, librarian and writer, Laura Zara-Bapinski, and today I'm so excited to have best-selling author Pam Genoff on the podcast to discuss her new historical novel, Codename Sapphire, a powerful novel about a secret resistance network during World War II and the unshakable resilience of women in even the hardest times. And I know people are going to have a hard time putting this book down, and it's really thought-provoking. Pam Genoff is the author of several novels, including New York Times bestsellers The Woman with the Blue Star, The Lost Girls of Paris, The Orphan's Tale, and The Diplomat's Wife, as well as The Commandant's Girl, which received widespread acclaim, earning her a nomination for the Quill Awards and becoming an international bestseller. She previously served as a foreign service officer for the U.S. State Department in Europe, as a special assistant to the Secretary of the Army at the Pentagon, and as a practicing attorney at a large firm. She received her JD from the University of Pennsylvania, her master's in history from Cambridge, and her bachelor's in international affairs from George Washington University. Pam Genoff lives with her husband, three children, and five pets near Philadelphia, where in addition to writing, she teaches law school at Rutgers. Pam, welcome to A Bookish Home. Thanks for being here and congratulations on your new book.
Well, thank you so much. I'm just thrilled to be speaking with you.
Yes, there is so much I want to dive into. And just to start, for listeners who haven't gotten to pick up Codename Sapphire yet, can you tell us a little bit about the premise and the characters we meet in this book?
Sure. So in Codename Sapphire, we meet Hannah Martell. And Hannah was living in Germany. She was a young woman, political activist, and she needs to flee the Nazi regime. And so she boards a transatlantic ship, but it is turned back from Cuba and the United States, and there's nowhere to go. And so Hannah finds herself back in Europe. She's in Brussels, staying with her cousin Lily. And in Brussels, she's still trying to get out. And so she makes contact with what's known as the Sapphire Line. And this is an underground network that is engaged in the business of helping downed Allied airmen get out of occupied space and back to safety and freedom. And so Hannah strikes up a deal with Micheline, who's the head of Sapphire. And she says, I'll help your network if you help me get out of Europe. But as Hannah starts to work with the Sapphire Line, she gets in much more deeply than she had imagined. And in a series of unfortunate events, she winds up getting her cousin Lily, Lily's husband, and their young son arrested. And so the novel is really about Hannah's attempt to free Lily and her family specifically from a train that is headed east to Auschwitz.
Well, one of the things that I think is so important about historical fiction that is set during World War II and the Holocaust is really having to experience and walk in another person's shoes and kind of see the world the way they would have saw it. And it struck me, I had just before I read this, watched that new documentary, The U.S. and the Holocaust by Ken Burns. And they, you know, depict a ship being turned back from, I think it was the U.S. or Cuba, and although it has to go all the way back to Nazi Germany because they're not letting them into the U.S. And I don't think it's the same ship in the story, but it just was really interesting to sort of follow what it would have been like for someone to get that close to sort of freedom and then be sent back to occupied Europe. And I just wondered, I mean, I'm sure you had known about that. I wasn't sure if the ship that Hannah's on is a real one, but I guess kind of just in general too, like along with that, kind of what started kind of her story for you in your mind? Because I know you have such a wealth of knowledge about all of this.
So I'd love to share with you the inspiration for Codename Sapphire. First, let me say, The Ken Burns documentary is obviously amazing. The real life ship was the St. Louis. And my ship that Hannah is on is inspired by the St. Louis. But as I was writing the story, I had to use different dates than when the St. Louis actually sailed. And I didn't want to misappropriate the actual history of that ship, which is why my ship is fictitious.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Now, so Codename Sapphire, in order to sort of tell you how I came up with it, I should tell you, I go looking for stories. I'm kind of looking for what I'm going to write next, because although my background is steeped in World War II, and I'm happy to talk about that more, I'm not writing the real stories of the people I met. It's the inspiration, but the stories I go looking for. And when I'm looking for a story, what I'm looking for is what I call the gasp. If I read a piece of history that is so fresh and so untold that it makes me gasp after 25 years of working with the war, I'm hopeful that readers will feel the same way. And so in the case of Codename Sapphire, the gasp was learning about a group of young people who tried to free prisoners from a train headed for Auschwitz. They stopped the train, they broke into the train, you know, and tried to get people off. And after the gasp, if I'm onto the right story idea, come what I call the questions. And in the case of this book, I was riveted and I wanted to know, how had these people been so brave as to undertake this attempt? And secondly, why hadn't more people tried to do the same?
That is so interesting, and that it was based on real events. I'm curious, as you're sort of looking for those story ideas, where did you stumble across the story? Was it in a book or in an archive or photos or something? I don't know.
Yes. And so first I should say, I never actually base my stories on actual events. It's more of an inspired by, because I don't ever want to stake too large a claim around what is real in my books. And so I always say inspired by, but the story is fictitious. So when I'm researching, you know, a lot of times I'm not able to travel. And fortunately, these days, we don't always have to, because so many of the archives have been put online. So there are wonderful archives from Yad Vashem, from the Holocaust Museum, from the Wiesenthal Center, all the museums have their archives. And so I would be hard pressed at this moment to tell you which archive I found out about the train. But when you find an idea like that, you're riveted, right? I'm riveted. And I start digging further into all sorts of things that are available, whether it's memoir, periodicals from the day, photographs, maps, correspondence, all of that. And sometimes if you're lucky, there's sort of a good nonfiction book that relates to your subject, or one or more books. And in this case, there was a book called The 20th Train that talked about the actual train where the rescue was attempted.
Oh, interesting. I don't know how much of this was written sort of during COVID, but I'm sure that's sort of a time too where everyone kind of has to figure out how to do this research and not be able to, you know, travel to Europe or wherever. Has your process changed because of that, or were you kind of already able to find what you needed kind of at a distance?
So I've generally over the past 20 years had to work a lot at a distance. You know, as you said in the introduction, I have three kids. We now have six pets. We added another cat. So sometimes really, really hard to go places. But online archives have just gotten better and better. Now, I will tell you as an aside that for my previous book, The Woman with the Blue Star, I had a trip to Poland scheduled for research on March 11th, 2020, you know, the whole world was like grinding to a halt. And my publisher said, we don't think you should go to Poland. And I said, I'm going to Poland and I'm going to wear one of those mask things, you know.
Oh my gosh.
My trip got canceled because the flight shut down. And thankfully they did. I actually had an emergency appendectomy the next day. So I would have been in the air over Europe. So
it's Oh my gosh.
That was a classic example of how COVID affected process, and that all of those meetings I'd had scheduled, I had to pivot those to virtual with the help of people on the ground in Poland at the time. So for Codename Sapphire, we were still virtual for that research process.
Well, I'm kind of curious, after you have figured out what your gasp moment is and you've started to research, are you someone who gathers everything you think you need and then you dive into maybe like plotting the book, or what's your writing process like?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. I think there's two separate processes. There's the research process and the writing process. So I remember years ago, I was on a panel with two other authors who write modern fiction. And one of them said, yeah, I just kind of start typing. And I did this massive double take. You what? Because, you know, for historical fiction, we have this whole other job of research. And there are writers who spend months researching before they start writing. That's not really me. I'm more of what I would describe as a contemporaneous researcher. So I have a little bit to start with. And then I research on kind of a need to know basis as I'm writing. And that's very efficient for me because research brain and writing brain are two different times of the day. So I do some research and I jump in. And then with respect to writing process, I don't know if other writers have said to you that there are these two types of writers, plotters and pantsers. Have you heard about this?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So plotters, in case anyone doesn't know, are the dear souls who outline and make things look nice as they go along. And that's not me. I'm definitely a pantser. I write by the seat of my pants. I go bleh for months and words come out in a random order. It's a terrible process, but it's the only way I can do it. But I will say, a couple books ago, I turned in a real stinker of a draft and I had to rewrite 90% of a book in 5 months. And I never want to do that again. So I'm a little bit of a plotter in that I do put together a rough outline before I start pantsing to make sure I'm in the right place.
That makes sense. Well, and I would imagine with your research, since you have done so many books now and you have this depth of knowledge of the period already, that probably helps too. And you know, that makes me wonder, I'm really interested to hear a little bit about your time in Europe, how that all sort of like maybe led you into this interest, or I guess maybe there's a different way it all came to be, but.
It's never linear, right? It's always linear. So my journey really to becoming a writer started about 26, almost 27 years ago, when I was sent to Krakow, Poland as a diplomat for the U.S. State Department. And I did not go to Poland to work on the war. I went, as junior diplomats do, to stamp visas and passports and help Americans in trouble. But in the mid-1990s, when I went, Poland had just come out of a half century of communism where they had no free speech and they were cut off from the West. And so there were many pressing issues from World War II that had been unresolved for, you know, approximately 50 years. When I got to Poland, I was this young woman in my early 20s. You can all figure out how old I am now. But I went to Poland before cell phones and before the internet alone. And I was completely isolated over there. And I'm Jewish. And so I had become very close to the local Jewish community in Krakow. I went to their synagogue every Sabbath, every Friday night. And I just had really become very close to the elderly survivors who were still in that part of the world. And the U.S. government saw that I had a relationship with these people, and they put me in charge of the portfolio of what we would loosely call, you know, Holocaust issues, things that still had to be resolved. And so I spent over 2 years in Poland on the ground working on things like anti-Semitism, returning property, you know, preserving concentration camps, really hard subjects. And
wow.
My life was changed by those years. And so I came back wanting to write about it. And I've been doing that ever since.
Wow, that is so interesting. And I'm sure now too, in addition to just the experience it was then to have been able to talk to survivors, you know, in the 90s and be able to really hear those experiences firsthand just must be, I would imagine, a continued source for your books. And of course, it's such a you know, meaningful experience to have had. Do you have sort of like things from that time you're able to go back to, like a collection of photos or notes from, you know, talking to survivors, things like that?
I definitely have a lot of memorabilia, you know, from the time and historical pieces and, you know, photographs and books and all of that. some of the people who I was closest to have passed on, but that's the passage of time. I mean, they passed on at 100 years old. And then some of the people are still there, which is why I was so heartbroken to have that trip canceled due to COVID. I still really owe myself a trip to Poland. It's on my high on my list. But what I have is a very deep connection to the people and the place and the history. And so I regard my books as love songs to the people who lived through that era. And after the gasp and after those initial questions, the first thing I must always ask is, can I write about this respectfully? Because if the answer is no, it goes no further. I feel a deep sense of responsibility in these books.
Have you heard from, you know, people that you did know in Poland who lived through this, or just even the Jewish community in Krakow, where you spent so much time, on sort of like their reaction to the books that you've written?
I have. So my books are published in Polish, and I'm very grateful. It's always, you know, the highest praise when I hear from people there who I knew. But what's also interesting is the people who I didn't know who I hear from. So on Codename Sapphire, I heard from two sisters in California whose parents were on the 20th train. They heard I was writing. They didn't read it yet, but they heard, I'm going to send them a copy, but they heard that I was writing this book. And they reached out to me. When I wrote The Orphan's Tale, which was about a German circus that had sheltered Jews during the war, I actually, after it came out, heard from the niece of one of the aerialists who had inspired my book. So it's always incredible to make those connections.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, you know, I'm kind of curious too then. I know sort of what I think would be the, in addition to obviously sort of like the creative process and just the fulfilling nature of writing stories, kind of what do you hope sort of the takeaway from your book are, or kind of do you have sort of like a mission you feel behind these stories?
I do. And it's a couple things. So one is that, you know, I went to Poland and I had a very preconceived notion of history. And so I went there and I found everything less black and white, more shades of gray. And so I really want people to understand that history is not these big, you know, big sweeping battles. It's an infinite number of individual decisions and individual choices. And I like to explore that in my book. And my goal for the first part is really to take readers and put them in the shoes of my protagonist and have that reader say, what would I have done in this circumstance? That's very important to me. The other piece is this. I write a lot about women in history, you know, women whose stories have not been told. And a lot of women, through normal history, would have walked on a very set path. And then they're thrown off the path by the war or catastrophe. They're tested and they're challenged. And I love to see what they're going to do. But they also interact with people, other women or other people, whom they never would have met but for the war. And I like readers to see my characters transcending that otherness, because if we can identify with someone who is doing that, I think it reduces so much of the division that we're all feeling in our everyday lives today.
So true. And as we're thinking sort of about the protagonist and the characters in this book, is there either like a part of Hannah's character or even Lily where you kind of struggled to either connect or you weren't quite sure where to take their story?
Well, so it's hard because I'm a pantser, it all sort of comes out at once, right? So I have all this material, I go blah, and then I figure out where it goes. So it's always hard to say like the beginning or the end, you know, it all sort of is finished when it's finished. I will say that as a writer, of course, there's many times you don't know where things are going. I don't actually believe in writer's block. This is kind of a slightly tangential, but I think it goes to the point. And what I mean by that is, in my other life, I was an attorney. I teach law school. And if I said as an attorney that I wasn't inspired to write a brief, I would lose my job, right? So I take a very business-like approach to writing. And I think that there are ways, like especially after all of these years, to work around when you're not sure what happens next. And I take great care to have a way to move the ball forward every day, whether it's research or whether it's a book on writing craft or whether it's some work in a notebook I do to put some structure there so I can figure out where I need to go next so that I'm never empty-handed on that.
Does it help then to have your role teaching law school and to be kind of thinking about something different? Because I would imagine too, it's difficult to be kind of thinking about these, heavy, kind of troubling, dark topics a lot. Does it give you sort of some balance to also kind of have your law school life as well?
I love my law school life. As we are speaking, I'm going back to my first day of teaching after sabbatical. So I'm super excited. There's many kinds of balance that come from the dual role. It's the solitude of writing and, you know, the interaction of the classroom. It's taking legal writing techniques and using them for my students. And conversely, taking things that I learned as an attorney, most notably the ability to revise and bringing that to fiction process. So there's actually really a nice synergy between the two.
And I know I read, I think maybe in an interview, when you had first been thinking about writing a book, you took a class called Write Your Novel this year. Could you tell us a little bit kind of about that, those beginning stages as a kind of new novelist?
I would love to. So I was one of those little kids long before I went to Europe. I was one of those little kids who always wanted to be a writer, and it was always going to be novels. But for many years, I could never get started. Even though I had the time, I just couldn't get it off the ground. Everybody's got a project they can't quite get off the ground. And for me, the turning point was actually 9/11. So I had come back from Poland. I'd gone to law school, and I began practicing as an attorney on September 4th, 2001. It was a Tuesday. 1 week later, 9/11 happened, and I had this epiphany. I mean, I loved being a lawyer. I still love the law, but I had a deeper dream of being a novelist. And if I had been a 9/11 victim, I never would have realized my dream. So 9/11 for me was this mortality moment when I realized I had to get serious about writing. So I took a course in Philadelphia, and it was called Write Your Novel This Year, which is incredibly intimidating. They changed it to Write Your Novel This Month, which sounds way more intimidating. I would not have. I took Write Your Novel This Year, and I started to work on what would become The Commandant's Girl. So that's really where I started. Still took 5 years until I was accepted for publication. I was still working as an attorney, so I was writing those books from 5 to 7 in the morning, but that was the first step.
It's just always interesting to hear sort of like the books that might not have been, if not for like particular choices that people make. Or
you have any writers listening, I just want to say this. I am like the picture of like, you know, of taking forever for it to happen. 39 publisher rejections. It took me 10 years to hit the bestseller list. So don't give up.
Oh, I love that. Kind of along your writing journey, are there particular writers that have helped you a lot along the way, or even kind of authors sort of in a similar genre that you really admire?
Well, you know, it's amazing. There is this incredible community of writers. Before COVID, we were all sort of connected. And then, you know, it was great because we had this infrastructure in place for everyone to go virtual and support each other. But writers are so generous. And I mean, writers who are, you know, the highest level of success and really are just doing it out of their goodness of their heart. So I'm going to name a few, recognizing that I'm going to leave so many people off this list. But everyone from, you know, Judy Blume to Kristen Hanna, to Jodi Picoult, to Mary Kay Andrews. And as I'm saying this to you, I'm cringing because I'm going to forget some of the, you know, biggest and most generous authors in my world. But so we all support each other. It's incredible and, you know, I very much want to pay it forward because I have been the beneficiary of so much of their generosity over the years. Oh, Lisa Scottolini. She's awesome. Also.
Oh, I love that. Well, I do always love to ask authors as well, are there any books you've been reading lately that you've really liked that you want to recommend to listeners?
I read constantly. Sometimes I've done this thing called 100 Days of Books. You can find it on Pinterest where I list a book a day for 100 days. I read across all genres. So if I were just to pick a few that I have really loved. Just The Nicest Couple by Mary Kubica came out in January. The Woman with the Cure by Lynn Cullen is out in February. And I could just keep going on and on. There's so many wonderful books out by author friends. And if anyone finds me online, I'm constantly posting, especially every Tuesday, about great books that are coming out.
Oh, I love that. Well, and I wondered too, are you sort of deep into the research and writing for your next book? And if so, are you able to share anything about it?
You know what's funny? I am normally an open book about what I'm working on. But what I'm working on right now, I'm deep into it, but it's so amorphous. It would be hard for me to give you a coherent description. I will say that there is a storyline during World War II. I will say that there is a storyline after World War II. And I will say that there is a mysterious object that connects them both.
Oh, interesting. You know, actually, it was making me think too, just like in terms of things to come. I kept thinking as I was reading Codename Sapphire that I wondered if it was getting like optioned for a movie or anything. Is that something that you've been, I don't know, hearing anything about?
Well, you know what's funny? For many years, if you had asked me about movie options, I would have said from your mouth to God's ears, because it had never, ever happened. And so it's only happened for one of my books. Lost Girls of Paris is currently optioned. And I think it's a limited run TV series. I'm not even sure that it's a movie. That one is optioned. And I think I'm, you know, not supposed to say maybe more than that. And the others, you know, it's a little early for Codename Sapphire, but I'm always hoping, you know, it's sort of the pipe dream. It doesn't really change much in my daily life, but of course it would be amazing.
Pam, I've so enjoyed getting to hear more about Codename Sapphire and your process and plug. I hope people go get Codename Sapphire from their local bookstore or library. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This has been so much fun.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.